We're going to talk tonight about what you can use DNA for. I'm not sure exactly how it works, but we'll assume with some type of thing. Everyone has their own map, and that you, what they take from their blood, or from when they sneeze, or from their skin. And you take that, and if you look at it, you can identify a person to one in a million accuracy, one in a billion accuracy. No?
Much higher, yeah.
Much higher. Okay, so we'll assume those are the facts, that DNA is a very good way of identifying a person. And we're going to see how it works in halacha in two main areas in Choshen Mishpat. And number one is if your house was robbed, chas v'shalom, can you do a DNA test to identify the robber through that? And number two, which is a more talked about shaila, if someone comes from Medina Sayyam, from far away, and he says, I'm a long-lost brother of yours, and the father has died, and all of a sudden he came, and he's a long-lost brother, and he wants to share in the Yerusha, can he prove that he's a brother with a DNA test to be motzi mamon from the other brothers, that he should get a share in the Yerusha? Right, those are the two shailos we'll talk about. Choshen Mishpat, can you be motzi mamon and prove someone's a ganav? And can you prove that someone's a yoresh based on a DNA test? Okay, so before we go into the shiloh, I'd like to review the last two shiurim, which will help shed light on tonight's topic. Two times ago, before the summer break, we spoke about tzvias eina dekola. We spoke about, can voice recognition count as eidos to identify a person? The case was Reuven asked Shimon, do you owe me $100? And Shimon's admission will only work if it's in front of two witnesses. And Reuven hid two witnesses behind a fence, and he said, do you admit it in front of the people that are awake and sleeping, whoever's here? Do you admit that you owe me the money? And he said, yes. So the Gemara says those two witnesses behind the fence will count as Edom to testify that Reuven admitted he owed Shimon money, or the other way around. So the Machlokas Achronim we spoke about, Tos and Nesivus, was to those, and that's Pasuk in the Shulchan Aruch, Simon Pei Aleph, and the Ktos and the Shulchan Aruch disagreed whether the witnesses have to have seen Reuven admitted to Shimon, or is it enough if they hear Reuven's voice admitting it to Shimon? The Ktos held that you cannot go by just what they said, what they heard. They have to also hear it. They also have to see it. They can't go by what they heard. They have to peek out and see Reuven to make sure it is Reuven making that hodah, making that admission. The Nesivos argued and said that you can rely on Tzvias Eina Dekola. He had all these different proofs from the Gemara. How can a Suma get the Gemara itself said, how can a Suma stay with his wife? It must be relying on her voice. And there were all these different rides we spoke about. The Nesiva said that you can rely on voice recognition as testimony. Right, that was, is that called seeing? To testify, you have to see something. So the Shiloh is, the Machlokas, Ktos and Nesiva that we talked about is hearing also the same as seeing? Can you use your sense of hearing the same way you can use your sense of seeing to testify about an event? So that's the Machlokas Ktos and Nesivos. Last week, we spoke about another Machlokas, another issue, and that was further, that's taking a step better than Tzvias Ayin Dekola and voice recognition. There we talked about circumstantial evidence. So normally we said circumstantial evidence is invalid to be motzi mamon. It's invalid for any testimony at all. It's in the nefashas and in the mamonos. We said you can't use circumstantial evidence. The case the Gemara said was you see him, Reuven running after Shimon, and you catch up to them, and Shimon's dead. Reuven's holding a bloody knife. You can't convict Reuven based on that. We said, however, there are three exceptions to that rule of not relying on the circumstantial evidence. The first was where the evidence is so overwhelming, it's no longer circumstantial. It's a yediyah. We now have a knowledge that this event happened. Eidos works either o yada o ra'ah, so you can see it, here you know it. And the case Tosfos gave the case, Achronim agree with it, is that based on a Gemara, that we know Reuven and Shimon are alone in a room. There's no one else in that room. And Reuven comes out with a bite mark in his back. No one else could have done it other than Shimon. And Halach is, we could be Motzi Mamon based on that bite mark, because we know that Shimon did it to Reuven. That's a Yediyah, and that's not called circumstantial evidence anymore. That was the first exception. The second exception we spoke about was the Marik. The Marik said that which we don't rely on circumstantial evidence is to try to determine what happened. To figure out, did that camel kill that other camel? Was it that camel that did it? Was this person who was the murderer? There we can't rely on circumstantial evidence to piece together the facts. But if we know what happened, we know exactly what happened. Reuven sold his property to Shimon, or he gave it away to Shimon. But through an umdana, through our thinking about, our assessment, we can determine that Reuven would not have given it to Shimon if he realized that he was going to stay alive, because the case was that he was a shchimera, he was on his deathbed, and that's why we know that's why he was giving away all his property. Otherwise he wouldn't have done it. So then when he miraculously recovers, he can void that gift. Or another case we spoke about, there are many cases, but the case we mentioned was that Reuven heard that his son had died, and immediately upon that he said, okay, all my property is going to this stranger, and then he finds out the son really is alive, so he can mevatel that kinyan, even though it's a real kinyan, based on this omen hadas, based on this understanding that wasn't in his mind. So that was the Marik's second exception to the rule, that we do rely on our senses, our common sense, to paskin ashayla, to figure out what was in someone's mind. We don't do it to determine facts, but we do it in order to figure out what a person meant. And thirdly, we spoke out the Rosh. The Rosh seemed to take it even a step further. He was using a Lashon, if it's an umdana muchach, if it's a very strong umdana, he proved from these same Gemaras and from this case with Rabbanah, with the grave we'll talk about later, that if it's a very strong umdana, you could be motzi mamon. And the case he was talking about was where Reuven claimed to Shimon that Shimon owed him money. Reuven didn't have good proofs, but whenever Shimon would answer, he seemed like he was covering up. The Dayanim asked him simple questions: what type of bills did you give him? I don't know. And where was it? I don't have to tell you. So that was the Din Meruma, and there we paskin like the Rosh also, at least the Ramah, the Smab Shach bring him down, that we can rely on an umdana namuchach, a very strong umdana, to be Motzi Mamon in such a case. That's what we spoke about the last 2 weeks. So when we get to DNA over here, the two Svarim that I'm mainly basing on is this Mishpatach Yaakov, Shimur Mishpat. They talk about this Shaila. So the Shimur Mishpat says, when we talk about DNA, first let's see if it works with Tvias Eina Dekola. Will it have any effect from what we learned about voice recognition? So he said, if you say DNA is equivalent, right, you want to know who this person is. Well, you can't see him. You can't tell by seeing him who he is. You can't tell by hearing him. You don't know what his voice sounds like. But maybe his DNA will be like voice recognition. So if you do that, you're at best stuck with the machlokas, ktsos, and nesivas. And you won't get too far with that. Unless you say, he says, it could be that maybe even the ketzos would agree just by voice recognition. That's not a good enough raya, but maybe DNA is a better raya. Maybe the ketzos would agree in this case that if DNA proves that a certain person is a yoresh, or a certain person robbed someone, we could rely on that as evidence. That's what he says at first. Mishpatach Yaakov, though, goes to last week's shiur, and he says, if you hold that DNA, and the Shimur Mishpat also says the same thing, if you hold that DNA based on Tvias Eina Dekola, the Mishpatach Yaakov also wants to say the same thing, just to remind yourself that we had this tshuva from Lavodas Gershuni, that Reuven had come from far away, and he told Shimon that he was his brother, and Avodas Gershuni relied on The people said, we don't recognize him, but we recognize his voice. And the Avodas Kesheni said we could rely on that unless there is contestants to that claim. So the Mishpat Yaakov wants to say, well, if we can rely on voice recognition in order for someone to yoreish, so then we could certainly rely on DNA, which is probably even a stronger raya than voice recognition. So that's what we can learn from voice recognition. Now, how about last week's shiur? So the pashtas, we could say that DNA is a very strong umdana, the muchach. Maybe it even takes away any shadow of the doubt that Reuven is a yoresh, a Reuven. Now, how you have a case of Reuven Rab, you have to have a case like this, that we know the property, the Leichter was in a closed room, and you went out of the room, and it was there, and you have it in a special place, and then you come back 5 minutes later, and it's gone, and there's one set of, let's say, fingerprints, or one set of DNA there, he sneezed when he was getting it, and you're able to identify this person, and he was never here before in your house in his whole life. So, and you could prove that. So then maybe you could rely on all these circumstances to prove it. Like, you know, if you can make it equal to a bite on Reuven's back when he was alone with Shimon, so then you could rely on that to be Motzi Mamon. You know, you'd have to have very strict defined standards to prove that he was the only one there, because maybe he was there 3 years ago, or maybe there's other DNA there if you keep on testing. You'd have to make sure that this is unique to be able to Motzi Mamon in a Gneiva. And the same thing would be, I think, with fingerprints. You have to be sure that this is, fingerprints are number one unique, and that they were only put here now from the time where the item was here till the Gneiva, and then maybe you would say that that's the same as a bite on the back. However, there's a kasha on this whole idea, because let's go back to last week. One of the last week's rayas, we talked about Rabba Noah. Rabba Noah had this issue where a woman had said that she has 10 sons and only one of them is legitimate. The other 9 are mamzerim from other men. So the husband heard that, and when before he died, he said he wants all of his Yerusha to go to the one son. Rabba Noah heard the case. How is he going to determine who the one son is? So he told them, go and bang on the father's grave, and through that they all went except for one, and he paskin, it must be that one they didn't go is the true yoresh, that's who the who should get the nechasim, and the others don't. Right? That was the Rosh's raya, that we rely on an umdan and a muchach to be motzi mamon. So a kasha we could ask is, why, if you hold that DNA is a good raya, why did Rabbi Noah do this case of having them run and bang on the grave, like a little bit, which Rashba calls it a shud of the dani. So how do we rely on a shud of the dani? Why didn't Rabbi Noah do a better test? Why didn't he do DNA? Why didn't he prove who was the real son? Are you going to say they didn't have DNA in those days? But the Rishonim talk, huh? That's what you're going to say. They didn't know about it. So, you know, that we go back to the shiur we spoke about many years ago. Can we assume that Shlomo Melech and Moshe Rabbeinu knew everything that we know? Okay, but let's assume they didn't know about DNA, or they didn't want to do that. But the Sefer Chassidim brings a Maisa from Rav Sadia Gaon that they had something very similar to DNA. The Sefer Chassidim says like this. Tzima Rav Sadia, there was a Shaila, there was a Machlokis between two people. Who was the real Yoresh? There was someone who it was assumed that this rich person had no children. He just had his Eved, and he had left his Nechasin to his Eved. Someone came, another one of these typical stories from Medina Siyam, and said, I am the son, and he had no way to prove it. So Rav Sadia Gaon found a way to prove it. Tzima Rav Sadia, the Sefer Chassidim writes, Tziva Rav Sadia lahakiz dan ze besafo echad. He told one, the Eved, he should put his blood in one basin, the dan ze besafo achir, and the alleged son should put a sample of blood in another basin. Belakach etzem shalviyah ben, he took a bone from the father. He put it into the basin of the servant's blood. Below nibla hardam, the blood didn't get absorbed in the bone. Then he took that bone, same bone, and put it into the basin of the blood of the son, who claims he's the son. The nibla hardam betzem, and then that bone, the blood, did get absorbed. So Rav Sadia proved that it must be that this is the son, ki hu guf echad, because this, they're the same DNA, they're the same genes, and therefore look, Rav Sadia amam and nasal of no, Rav Sadia took the money from the Eved who had thought that he was going to get it, and he gave it to the son who had come from Medina Sayon. So that's the Sefer Chazina brings this Maisa from Rav Sadia Gaon. So El Yerava asks Akasha, if such a test is possible, if this is really a valid test, so why did Rava Noah in the Maisa in Bava Basra, why did he have them go run over and bang on the graves? Why didn't he use this test to determine who the real son was? This is a real scientific test that you can find out where the blood gets absorbed, and you can prove who is the real relative. The other are mamzerim, nothing to do with this man. The other is a real son. Why didn't he do such a test? So Eli Rava seems to be saying that we can't rely, it must be that we can't rely on such a test to determine who is the real son. You can't rely on, you need to have Eidus, you can't rely on these types of tests. That's Kasha that Eli Rava asks on the Sefer Chasidim, and Memela, it should be a Kasha, what we're saying, that we shouldn't be able to rely on DNA to determine who a Yerush Aziz is, just like we can't rely on this blood test. It must be that we don't rely on these types of tests to be Motzi Mamon. However, the Rishas gives an interesting chiluk, which makes a nafkamina in halacha also. The Rishas says there's a difference in Rav Sadia's case and the Gemara's case. In the Gemara's case, what would have happened if Rav Noah had gone and done this DNA test or this blood test to find out who's the real son? What would that have said about the other sons? That would have said that they're mamzerim. And we have this yesod in halacha that we always try to hide the fact we don't want to, even though we always try to investigate and find out the truth about everything, when it comes to mamzerim, we try to hide our eyes. We cover our eyes when it comes to mamzerim. We don't want to make people mamzerim. So Bishlaman, in Rav Sadigan's case, no one is going to be a mamzer. There's no harm done over there by doing the test. One's an eved, one's claiming to be a son. Let's find out if he's a son. If he proves to be the son, the other is an Eved. All the losses that he loses his money, but he doesn't become apostle for the call for that. So really, you could use such a test. However, if it's going to create mamzerim, so in that case, the Rishash says that Rabbi Noah didn't want to use that case and create mamzerim. What did Rabbi Noah's test do? Right, so that's like we said last week, according to the Ma'arik, the way he explained it, based on the Rashbam, the Rabbi Noah wasn't proving who the son was. Rabbi Noah was proving who the father loved the most. Rabbi Noah was showing, you all go out there and bang on the grave. And the Rashba's lashon was, and the one that didn't go, we see that he was all of Yosef, so he must have loved that one more than all the others. And Memela, Rabbi Noah was able to figure out that's who the father meant to give it to. The father didn't know who the son was himself either. No one knew. No one even knew if the mother was saying the truth. But the father wanted to give it to the one person who he has the greatest affinity to. So Rabbi Noah was willing to do such a test. And he proved that this one is the one he loves the most because he's not willing to go to the grave. But he didn't do it in any harm. No one ended up getting passing, becoming a mamzer based on that, and that's why Rabbi Noah did such a test. However, if you recall, last week we said that the Rush understands Rabbi Noah's test was really to determine who is the real son, right? The Ma'arik was saying that because he holds, we said that shot in the Ma'arik, because the Ma'arik holds that you can only use circumstantial evidence to discover what a person has in mind, not to discover what facts are. So we said, what's the Ma'arik do with Rabbi Noah's case? We said, it wasn't to discover the facts. It wasn't to discover who the real son was. It was to discover who the father had in mind when he said, I want to go to my favorite person, my one son. But the Rush who learns from Rabbi Noah's case that we do rely on circumstantial evidence even to piece together facts apparently understood that Rabbi Noah was willing to use this test even though it will result in mamzerim. He didn't care. You have to find out what the father meant, and if that's what happened, you let the pieces fall where they fall. So, according to the Rush, though, doesn't have to agree with the Sefer Chassidim. He goes, oh, there's no such test like Rav Saad Yagon says. He, according to the Rush, this is the only way to find out, and then this is a good test. And there wasn't any other test. The Kasha was on Rav Saad Yagon and the Sefer Chassidim. What do they do with the case? What do they do with Rav Anah? So they could hold like the Ma'arik and hold that the test of Rav Anah wasn't to determine who the son was. The test was to determine who the father had in mind when he was giving it to the son. Because to determine who the son was, that would create mamzerim, and that we don't want to do, and that way everything comes out nice. Rabbi Yashiv brings a raya from this. He brings this Roshash, Rabbi Yashiv in his Kovet Shuvas. He says, from here we see that even if you want to rely on DNA, which we're saying, if it is such a one in a million proof, it could be a yediyah. Now we know who's the yoresh. Well, we can use that to determine who a yoresh is. But suppose there's another case, a messy case, where a woman says that this son, like the Rabbi Noah's case, this son isn't from her. So, Rabbi Yosef had the shayla, do you do a DNA test then to see if she's right, to prove that this isn't really his, the father, the supposed father's son? Do you do such a test? He says, you see from this Gemara that we don't do such a test. Because we don't want to create mamzerim, we don't do tests to prove that someone's a mamzer. The halacha is a woman's not believed to say that she's tameya. She's not believed to say that she was mizana and her son is from someone else. That Gemara says she's simply not believed. Nowadays we have a way of proving it. In those days there was no way to prove it. Nowadays we have a way to prove it from DNA. So Rabbi Yosha proves from this Gemara, from the Rishash's Teretz to Rav Saad Yagon, from the Gemara with Rav Anah, that even though we'll use a test to determine who a Yoresh is, but we won't use a test even to determine a Yoresh if it will result in someone becoming a mamzer. And certainly we won't do a test that will just be, whose whole purpose is to prove someone's a mamzer, that we don't do. I just have also here from the side, Nishim Savron brings from Rosh Hashanah Zalman also, that we rely on DNA to Paskin Shailas, who a father is, for Yerusha. He also says that we don't rely on it for Nizikin. Nishim Savron brings another right, but I think that'll because it's not so possible to make it equal to the bite mark on the back. But you know, if you could prove it, it shouldn't be any different than a proof like that. Just one last issue, and it's also machlokas. Okay, so we can rely on DNA based on last week's year, maybe 2 weeks, so we can rely on tvias ayin to kol, that's a machlokas and tvias and ktos. But if something's a real clear proof that there's no way of refuting it, so in that case, we'll rely on DNA to allow someone to be motzi mamon to become prove he's a yosh. By the way, a negative test I read isn't as accurate as a positive test. Right? So if someone is determined to be this match up with the father, so that's one in a million, one in a billion. If it doesn't work, so then it's the accuracy isn't as accurate. So that might be another reason not to rely on it. But anyway, even if it would be one in a million, one in a billion, Rabbi Yosha says you don't do it to prove someone's a mamzer. So the issue is like this. What happens if the father's dead? Right? If they're arguing the father's alive, okay, take the father's DNA, take his DNA, and you can prove that he's a Yoresh. How about if the father's dead, he's already buried, can you dig the father up in order to prove that, take a sample of DNA to prove that this is the son, that he should be able to be Yoresh him? So this gets into a sugya. Yeah, that's a good kasha. Rabbi Yosef asked that kasha. Either it was alive or it wasn't buried. Some reason they had kept it in a a museum or something. Huh? But Rabbi Yosef points that out. So how about if he's buried? Is there any issue? So we're going to talk about the issue, the iser of nivul hames. Let's see the Gemara. So Gemara in Baba Basra. This is brought in Chosh Mishpat, so it's, even though it's not Chosh Dayanim, but it is brought in Hilchos Yerusha. Maisa b'nei Brak, there's a Brisa that says like this, there was a Maisa in b'nei Brak, b'echa shemocha b'nigniksei aviv b'meis. What happened was the father had died, and left behind a bunch of brothers, and one a bunch of children, and one of those children went and sold the father's nechasim, and then he died. So the other Yarshim wanted it, so the person who bought the property from the son said that it's mine, he sold it to me, and it's mine now. But the other members of the family came, and they said it wasn't a good sale. Why? Because Lomar Katan Hayvishas Misa. When he sold it, he died a katan, and certainly when he sold it, he was a katan, and the sale is not valid. So that's what the other Yarshim wanted to say, and therefore the whole sale is not valid, and they should Yarish be inherited from their father like normal. So Vishalas Rabbi Akiva, they came and asked Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva's in Bnei Brak, like we know from the Haggadah. So they came and asked Rabbi Akiva, Mahu Lebodko, can we take the body of this son and see if he has two simonim? See if he has two sires, and let's find out if he's a gadol. Can we prove that he was a katan by that? So Amr Lehem, Rabbi Akiva said, Yatem Meshoyim Lenavlo, that's Nibul Hameis. You're not allowed to defile a dead person, and you can't do that. And Ba'od, also Simonim Asuim Lishtanis Lachamisa, even if you don't find the Cyrus, it could be that they were there, and therefore it's no Raya, and it's no purpose in doing it. So the Gemara brought this because it was Machlokas, Reish Lokas, and Rav Yochanan. I read the Gemara the way the Gemara first wants to bring as a Raya. Reish Lokas, though, to defend his position, in a different halacha, he wants to say a different pshat in the Gemara, in this Maisa. Reish Lokas says like this, Mi Savi, do you think Nichsei Becheskes Venei Meshpacha Kaimi? Do you think what happened over here was that the Nechasim were being held by the family members, the Ka'asa Lekuchos Ma'arimi, and the purchasers were coming and said they want to get the property back from the Yarshim, and they want to prove that, and they want to prove that the person was a Godol? No, that's not the case. Nifli v'cheskas v'kuchas kaimi, the purchasers already had the money. The ka'os of any mishpacha, the ka'ma'ari, and then it's the mishpacha that came, and they wanted to prove that he was a katan and get it back. Right? It wasn't, you know, that's the way we said it, but the Gemara first held the other way, that it was that the kuchas had wanted to prove that he was a gadol and take it. The Gemara says, no, that's not what happened. The kuchas already had the property, and the family wanted to prove that he was still a katan. And now the Gemara goes further. Hakinami Mistabra. This also makes sense. Now the Karmel, since Rabbi Kiva said, Iyatem Mishaylin Navlo, you're not allowed to be Menavlo him, he's stupid, and they were quiet. So Iyam, if Yishma Venim Shvachal Kamari, it makes sense if it's that the Lekuchos, the buyers were holding it, and the family members wanted to prove that he was a katan. Mishum Hachi, that's why they were kari, because they didn't want to. So of course they wouldn't want to be novel their brother, their relative. Ali Amrit Lekuchas Kamari. But if you say it's really the children, had the family was in possession of the property right now, and it's the buyers who were trying to prove from digging up the son that he was a godol. If he says they that were complaining, my Shaski, why were they quiet? Rabbi Akiva said, you want to be an alpha of the maze? Let them tell Rabbi Akiva, we pay this person, this dead kid, money, and we want to get our property. Limbo, limbo, let him become completely defiled. We don't care whether it is nibble and mace. We pay the fair and square. We want our property back. Bishlama, a family member, he won't do a nibble and mace. But if it's a stranger, certainly he would. So Gemara says that you see from here that it's a raya, that it must be the Lekuchos had the money. It's the family who was trying to get the money back, to get the property back, by proving that the son was a katan. And to that, Rabbi Kiva said, you don't want to do that because you don't want to do nibble ameis. So Gemara says, it's no raya. Im shemuhalo ir, yes, no raya from the kasachi karmel. This is what Rabbi Kiva said. First of all, you don't want to be novel ameis. This is what they told the buyers. And furthermore, if you say, well, I don't care, we gave the money and we won it, and we don't care about his nibble, he's not related to us. So Rabbi Kiva says, Simonim asurim l'shtanus l'chamisa, Simonim changed after Misa. Right, so from this Gemara, we see this concept called Nibul Hameis, We don't dig up bodies to prove monetary halachas if that person's a relative. Right? That's what we see. If it's stam lekucha, so then you say someone owes you money, so then you don't care about nivel meis. I paid the money and they're trying to cheat me, so I don't care about nivel meis. A relative, though, can't do nivel meis. So based on this Gemara, there is a famous machlokas, the Shuvah Eliyahu and the Shiva Sion, the Nota Yehuda's son, that there was someone who had died, and they didn't know who he was, and they buried him. And the woman, whose husband had run away, thought that it was her husband that was found, who was found dead. And she said she could prove it's her husband by looking at his finger. He had a finger that was deformed. It was a different size than the other fingers and one of his toes. And that was a siman, a clear siman muvak that no one in the world had. And she said, all you have to do is dig him up and we'll see that his finger is different and his toe is different. And that way she won't be an aguna. She wanted to know, could we dig up this, well, she wanted to, and halacha that these gadolim are faced with, the Shuvah Meyava was asked, can we dig up this dead person, unidentified dead person, to see if he has that finger, has that toe, to help the person not be an aguna. So the Shuvah Meyava said that it's mutter, and it's raya was from this gemara, because if the kuchos, someone who spent $1,000 on someone's property, he has a right to dig up a person to prove that he was really a gadol at the time, unless, except for the fact that the simonim could change. But if not for that, Rabbi Kiva had no problem in him bringing him up. We don't care about nivel meis by lekuchos. So Kolshkein, this woman who is going to be an aguna, that's even more important. You know, for a monetary gain, we'll let someone do a nivel meis. For this woman, certainly will allow her to take it up. We'll say linvo v'linvo, that she shouldn't be an aguna. Because here, I just say that, well, she's related, she shouldn't want to do it. Yeah, but her husband ran away 6 months ago, and it wasn't such a relationship. And we only see by Yarshim that there's nivel meis, but where the husband ran away, so I don't think that there's that issue. And then, secondly, Shulam Yav said, interesting, he said, it's also a covet for this mace, because by doing that, the children will be able to say Kaddish. And so right now, we know one knows who he is, and then this Aguna, who his husband ran away, has children, and if we determine who this is really her husband, relying on her edus, what, his finger and his toe, so then she won't be an aguna anymore, and the children will be say Kaddish, and that's the way the Tshuva Meyava paskened at first. The Shiva Sion answered back at him, he said, you never see such a thing that you dig up someone to determine anything. The only time you change a grave is, the halacha Mawi Katan, the Gemara says, is to move him to Kever Avosav, or to go from Chutz Laaretz to Eretz Yisrael. You never see any other case where you move someone to dig up someone's grave. Tshuva Meyava says that's no raya for an aguna or mekel. However, Tshuva Meyava says I'm chozer for a different reason, as a very important reason. He says, you're right, it could be that for nivel ameis we will, for a good cause, we'll do nivel ameis, right? We'll see the katan agadol. We want to know what the halacha is. Tell someone not be an aguna, we would do it. But what's the case over here? Over here is we're not sure. We're not sure who this dead person is. She says, "Well, if it's my husband, he has a finger and a toe, and I have a right to do nivel ameis on him because I want to prove that I'm not an aguna." But maybe it's not him. Maybe it's someone else who's a completely different person. She's assuming he ran away and there's a dead person. I want to find out. So Shuvah Meyava says, you can only rely on these svaras when you know who the person is. You know this person is the son. We're not sure whether he was a gadol or a katan. So there we could take him out because for a tzorach we could find out whatever we need to find out by taking him out. But if we don't know who it is, and we're just trying to identify who it is in order to be matcher this aguna, we might not be matcher anyone. It might not be end up being any tolas by taking him out. So therefore, he pops in, you can't do it in that case.
So if it might be, as somebody said, he had red hair and he was
Right. So Ksav Sofer says like that. He says that if it would be a case where there's some reason to think it already was Osmo, like Mamash, like you're saying, not it wasn't a Siman Muvuk, it was like a medium Siman. But the three types of levels of Siman, it was a medium Siman. A bad Siman is that he's tall. You know, he has a black jacket and a white shirt and glasses. Right? So that's not a Siman at all. But like you're saying, red hair and he gets it tight. And that's who we know who got buried. But it wasn't a Siman enough to be Matra Nuguna. So in that case, Ksav Sofer says, the Shuvah Me'avah would agree that you were taken out in disagreement with the Shiva Siyan. The Shalom Eishev, the Poskim seem to agree with the Shuvah Me'avah Svara that for a Heter Aguna, or to say Kaddish, we do take out a Mace to determine who he is. That seems to be a consensus. You know, the Olenu shouldn't happen. You know, of course, there's something like this or big Shilas, you'd have to ask a Shila in such cases. You know, we've seen, you know, with the different tragedies over the years where you couldn't identify who the person is, so well, we rely on DNA in such a case. So from this we'll see that first of all, we will rely on DNA. Will we take out someone from a grave to determine who he is? So nowadays it could be with DNA, even though it's, we don't find out it's Reuven, but we'll find out it's Shimon. It could be that either way it'll be a Toas, we would do it. But certainly in a case like you're saying, that if we had reason to believe that this is the person, we would take him out under such a circumstance. Now back to our Shaila. Our Shaila is where we know who the dead person is. The dead person is Reuven. This person from Medina Sayan is coming and saying, I'm Reuven's son. So can we do a test on Reuven to prove that Shimon is his son? Can we take him out to do that? So Mishpatach Yaakov says, well, we found a heter for an aguna. We found a heter for a big tzarech. We could do it. But just as he should get money, l'chora, we don't have any raya that he could do it. Either he'll say Kaddish, will be one extra child saying Kaddish, he's not willing to go that far. From this whole machlokas, he's scared to go that far. For Aguna, maybe we could, even that's a machlokas, but someone should get a share of a Yerusha to take someone out so that we don't go. Well, I mean, it's a whole Shaila. By the way, also a nivel mace, what exactly the nivel is? Is it taking a part of the mace? Is it just opening up the grave itself? That's a whole different sugya that we don't want to get into right now. So, summing up what we've done tonight, is DNA good raya to be motzi mamon? So based on what we said last week, if it's in a way where beyond the shadow of the doubt we've identified who the mazik was, who the murderer was, who the ganev was, and certainly to determine that this person's a yoresh, which is more likely, we can do such a test. We can do a DNA test. He comes from Medina Siam and everyone's still alive. Well, that's a shiloh also, by the way, the Mishpatach Le'achah talks about. Suppose the father's dead, but we know there's one brother here and he wants to prove he's his brother with the DNA test. Can the one brother say, I don't want to take a test? You know, I don't know you, and I'm equipped to take a test. So that's a whole shayla as a machmeis into a machlokas which I'm also. But that's a different topic. So if the father's here and he's willing to give the, and then the brother was willing to give a test, so we can rely on DNA, assuming that it's the 1 in a million accuracy that they say. If it's such an accuracy, that's called a yedia. Now we know that this person is a yoresh to our yedia, even though we don't have edus. It's o ra'a, o yoda. To us, it's not a child anymore. We know that he's a son, just like I know that this is who your son is because I know who he is. I don't need to have two witnesses tell me. I know that that's your son. That's a good raya. So DNA can serve as an umdana, more than an umdana, as yedia, that a person is Yoresh, that he could be Motzi Mamon and take that money from a Yerusha. We said we would not use a DNA case, a test, based on this Rishash's teretz of the El Yerabas Kasha on the Sefer Chasidim. The way Rabbi Yashiv explains it, well, we won't do a DNA test if it will result in proving that someone's a mamzer, because we're not interested in creating mamzerim. We wouldn't do a DNA test in such a case. Or if the woman wants to prove that the son is not from her husband, we won't allow her to do a DNA test, because we don't want to create mamzerim. What happens if the father is dead already? Will we take him out to match the DNA with this alleged Yoresh? So that we saw, it's even a machlokes whether we will take a mace out for a nibble a mace, if it would be a tzarech for aguna to be moti momen. It's not so simple that we would do it, even though, and especially because here the nibble is a relative, right? It's memonoshach. Why do you want to? Why does this relative? Well, we said it. If it's outsider, so then you can have nibble mace. But why over here does this person want to take the dead person? Because he says he's his son. Well, if he's son, if it's his son, so then he's not allowed to do nibble mace. And if it's not his son, so then there's no person purpose in doing it. So in such a case, Mishmatech Yaakov is scared to be matir a nibble mace to prove that he's the Yoresh.